It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back into the Labatt Blue Studio. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Bleed blue and white, drink blue and light, and don't forget to try the new Labatt Blue Light Seltzer Variety Pack, now available at beer retailers throughout Pennsylvania. It's quarter number two of the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Greg Pickle. And Greg, this is a huge week in college football. With the season going late, it kind of has gotten lost in the shuffle. But this week, it's the early signing period. And before we get started talking about it, I would just like to point out we're recording this show prior to all the signatures coming in. So if there were any surprises, our listeners might know that before we did here as we're recording. But Greg, I still would like to talk about this recruiting class. It's been a much maligned class for much of the time. It's been rated in the 30s nationally, but it's currently the national rank is 20th. What's your overall view of this class?
Well, I think you make a good point, Jim. I mean, this class was kind of really beat up on throughout the course of this cycle, and usually with good reason, right? I mean, Penn State missed out on some really high-profile targets. There was a point there where it looked like they could have 3 4-star receivers from the Mid-Atlantic. They didn't end up with any of them. Of course, Lonnie White being elevated to a 4-star not too long ago helped in that regard. He, of course, is one of Penn State's 15 verbal commitments as we talk about this class of 2021 heading into signing day. But, you know, for all intents and purposes, Jim, in a COVID year where Penn State lost its chance to get guys on campus and really use its best recruiting tool to its advantage. Keep in mind that they hired 4 new coaches and most of them had no opportunity to meet kids and their families in person. And, you know, there were no official visits. There was none of this, that, and the other thing. And I know that Penn State's not the only school impacted by this. Every school is. And some schools handled it better than others. And some schools had a better message to pitch than others. So I think that helped matters. But I mean, all told, this is not going to go down as one of Penn State's most impressive classes, Jim. But, you know, I was looking back at, and we talked about this earlier in the show, but I was looking back at the class of 2016 last week prior to senior day. And, you know, there were a number of guys in that class that, went on to really be a big part of maybe not the Big Ten title year, but a lot of wins that came after that. And, Jim, that group was ranked number 20 in the country and number 4 in the Big Ten. And where at this moment in time does the class of 2021 stand, you ask? Number 20 in the country and number 4 in the Big Ten. So I think it's a good reminder that sometimes the star rankings don't look as pretty as everybody wants them to. And sometimes the class isn't made up of all the players we thought it would be. But, you know, I still think that we could see some surprises here. I know they're still pushing hard for Dahan Moore and the Lackawanna College corner, junior college standout who committed to Georgia kind of out of the blue. So that may be something to keep an eye on moving forward, whether he signs with Georgia or waits till February or whatnot. So keep an eye on that. You know, there's a running back, Tashun Morrell, who they're keeping an eye on, and he'll announce later this week. Friday, I believe he's set to declare his decision. So there are still some things to watch here. But, you know, I guess I'll say this, Jim. Assuming we get back to somewhat of a normalcy in 2021, and that means the class of 2022 can get on campus and Penn State can really use that tool to its advantage, it's not the end of the world that this class that was going to be small from the jump ended up being the one impacted by the pandemic. You know, you never want to fall behind in recruiting, and you never want to see programs you're competing with get the high profile players that you wanted. But, you know, ultimately, there's nothing Penn State can do about that at this point. It's said and done and over with. And we've talked for months now about why those things happened and the struggles that led to those points. So it kind of just is what it is. They're going to need this group to come in and be quickly developed. You know, I think obviously to me, Jim, just looking at the class, the thing that just jumps out to me is that we just spent a segment talking about the fact that Penn State is playing 2 quarterbacks and that James, you know, who knows if that's sustainable moving forward? Who knows what that looks like next year? None of us has the answer to those questions. But the quarterback signing in this class, Jim, Christian Vayu, he had his high school season canceled. So he has not now, he hasn't played for a year now. So if anyone's hoping he was going to come in and be a quick fix at quarterback, that seems highly unlikely. So that kind of jumps off the page at you. And so too does, of course, the lack of, you know, a lot of PA talent. I mean, they have Nate Bruce, Anderson Haydak, Khalil Dinkins, all committed to them, in addition to, as we mentioned before, Lonnie White. White, with a re-ranking, now the only player in the top 10 from PA in this class. And they have four guys from Michigan, which is an area that, you know, Tim Banks has really recruited well. So, all told, I don't want to – it's tough, Jim. You don't want to be too hard on them, and you don't want to make the pandemic be too much of an excuse either, because, again, everyone's dealt with it. But all told – this class might end up being a little bit more productive at the college level than I think what many will give it credit for this week.
That has been the case in the past. I think the couple things that have made Penn State fans negative about this class, you alluded to one of them, which is their lack of numbers from Pennsylvania recruits. And the second part to that is so many high-profile names that Penn State was in on and at one point considered the favorites for them went elsewhere. So there's no other way to put it, but their number one targets went elsewhere. Several of these players were really Plan Bs.
Yeah, that's 100% right, Jim. I mean, and that is kind of part of the issue here, is that Penn State has missed out on so many guys in this class that, you, if fairly or unfairly, we're not talking about a group that is completely and entirely made up of top targets, right? Guys who were Plan A on the board. I think you can call Landon Tangwall that. I think you can call Lonnie White that. You know, some of these guys, maybe you can look at them and say, well, they were you can make the argument that they were Plan A guys because Penn State offered them really early. Like Nate Bruce is a good example of that. Liam Clifford's a good example of that. Jeff Davis. I mean, guys who Penn State offered really early in the process wanted to get in this class and did. But so maybe we change the wording of that. Maybe Plan A is not the right word. But when you look at going into this year, Jim, you would have said that Nolan Rucci was one of the top targets on Penn State's board. If you were ranking in the order of preference in terms of whether or not you get a guy, how many of them did that Penn State actually get? Tangwall might be the only one in terms of the top five guys on the board, in terms of future outlook, in terms of rating and everything like that. I mean, like I said, DeHaan Warren could surprise us, but he's set to go to Georgia right now. Nolan Rucci set to go to Wisconsin. You know, Caden Prather's another guy that they were in on pretty early, and he's going to head elsewhere. I mean, there's too many examples like that in this class, and that's, I think, again, what people have been frustrated by the most, is that there were a lot of players that it looked like Penn State would be in on, Jim, and that Penn State would find a way to get at a number of different positions, and it just hasn't worked out that way. And there's, again, a lot of some kids are just choosing to stay closer to home because they feel more comfortable with the pandemic and everything. You know, some guys looked like Penn State leans for the longest time, and then this has been a theme of the James Franklin era, right? You lead for a guy forever, and then you don't land him. And sometimes there's a rhyme and a reason to that, Jim, and more often than not, there just isn't. So, you know, again, I agree with your point that this was a class that really, you know, yet again, Penn State thought it would really take a next step and get some highly rated four-star, five-star kind of guys. It just hasn't happened. You know, so with the re-ranking, Jim, I think this class looks a lot more respectable than it did at this time. What, 2 months ago, 3 months ago? I don't think there's any question about that, but it's yet another cycle where I think we all kind of thought this would be, you know, the year that maybe they land a Brock Bowers, Jim, who's a number three tight end in the country. He was considering them there for a little bit, ended up picking Georgia. You know, maybe you land a Dante Thornton, who was committed to Penn State at one point and now is heading elsewhere. You know, maybe you keep Nolan Rucci in state. You know, maybe you get Tristan Lee. Maybe you get some of these other guys that we've talked about for quite some time who Penn State was in the picture with at at worst, and then, you know, fell out of it right at the last second when it became decision time. You know, Diego Pounce, another good example of that. Looked like Penn State was the leader for how long. He ends up picking North Carolina. Just a few too many instances like that in this cycle where Penn State either was in a horse race neck and neck with somebody else and lost, or they were in the lead and then magically lost it. It went poof. Right around decision time. So that's kind of, I think, why some are looking at this class in a negative light, and it's hard to argue with.
Another thing that stands out to me, Greg, you recruit somewhat for need. If you and need isn't what you need this year, it's probably what you need in a couple years. There seems to be a bit of an imbalance. There are four wide receivers. There are four defensive backs. Meanwhile, only two offensive linemen and one defensive lineman.
Right. I mean, yeah. And again, I think that when you look at this class, there are some obvious things that make you stop and say, what's going on here? The trenches are certainly one of them. But Jim, we don't have enough time in this segment to list out all of the guys who Penn State, we thought they'd have a chance with on the offensive line, and then weren't able to stay in that conversation until the end. I mean, Tristan Lee's a guy. Nolan Rucci's a guy. You know, Garrett Dellinger's a kid they recruited. Wyatt Millam's a kid they recruited. You know, then you flip to the defensive side of the ball, that's been messy, really, this entire cycle. And I think part of the problem there is that John Scott, you know, Sean Spencer left, and then they lost some of the relationships there, actually a lot of the relationships, because John Scott Jr. was recruiting different kids at South Carolina before he got here. You know, Kelvin Gilliam was a guy they were after hard. He ends up at Oklahoma. Elijah Judy decommitted, you know, but he's headed elsewhere, it would appear. Naquan Brown flipped from somewhere to Pitt. George Wilson's a defensive end we thought they could land. They weren't able to stay in that recruitment. He's undecided, but I don't really see a way for them to land him at this point in time. So defensive tackle recruiting, kind of the same thing. I mean, you look at the names here and you thought maybe these are some guys that Penn State could get in front of and get in the door, but it just hasn't happened, Jim. It just hasn't worked out in their favor at a number of positions this year, and the trenches have certainly been one of the leading headliners of that conversation.
Yeah, it's unfortunate the misses that they've had, but as we alluded to earlier, sometimes these classes surprise you, and whether you have a big class, small class, really successful class or not, it's amazing how few of these guys actually do come through. So you just hope there's a handful of these players who do turn into productive players, and that is still possible. All right, that is it for quarter number two. When we come back, it's quarter number three, and that means it's time to ask Greg. We take your questions, and Greg will answer them. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Jim from the Keystone Sports Network. If you're a fan of our Keystone Kickoff Show and you don't want to miss any of our analysis and review of the Penn State football team, there are plenty of ways to make sure you don't miss a single segment of our show. The best way to hear everything that Dustin, Greg, Ross, Bob, and Andy have to say is to download our app, Keystone Sports, from your app store. You can also find us on Spotify, the Apple Store, Google Play, and KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. We are the place for Penn State football analysis.
This is where the temperatures are unkind. This is where water freezes in the blink of an eye. This is where the wind bites harder than a mid-ice cross-check. This is where the beer is always on ice. This is Labatt Hockey, played the way Mother Nature intended. Labatt Blue is proud to support pond hockey and all the hardy souls that like to play it cool. This is Labatt Hockey.
Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.